listening to CIT Air, when I went with my wife in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Rumpus Room, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus. Go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure.
Welcome to Transition State on CITR 101.9.
We had a good run, we stayed up late for now the night's done. Never mind, at least we had fun, but I don't see the point now anymore. And I kissed you a million times until my lips blue. I didn't feel the way I want to, I don't get a thrill now anymore. I can hardly remember the last time that I cared for anything at all. The sun forever, nothing in the sky to bother me at all.
Transition State's inaugural broadcast. I'm your host, as ever faithful always, Adam. I'll be taking you for a rock pharmacy ride this week. This week we'll be hearing from Dr. Simon Albin, professor and recent PhD graduate at UBC's Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences. Tyler, if you're listening, I hope you appreciated the face-melting propaganda intro, and I also hope you enjoyed that rec center times a billion. And now here's White Horse and Canadien Héros.
Market is back every Thursday at 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. from July 3rd to September 25th. A stretch of sidewalk at 8th and Vine will be turned into a local food market. Join us for hyper local foods, live music, coffee, and more.
Lovely. And now it's time to get to the interview portion of the show. This week I sat down with Dr. Simon Albin. Here's how it went.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'll start with a disclaimer. So this is not medical advice. This is just people talking in conversation. If you ever have any healthcare concerns, please consult a professional, not this radio show. So that said, if you could change one thing about pharmacy practice, what would it be?
Polypharmacy. People taking multiple drugs is very common now. As an example, if a person is on five meds, which is not unusual, there's a 50% chance of a drug interaction. If you go up to seven meds, there's a 100% chance of a drug interaction. And so right now in the healthcare system, there is nobody that can manage that. And that is the niche that pharmacy is trying to move into. And the savings to the healthcare system, incredible. Well, you know, we're talking to the tune of billions of dollars there.
If you could change one thing about pharmacy education, like the way we teach new pharmacists, what would you change?
Well, I mean, I think you and I have had conversations about that already, right? So traditionally, pharmacy education has been built around five disciplines. Those are the what are called the basic pharmaceutical sciences, pharmaceutics, which is drug delivery, medicinal chemistry, and pharmacology, the science of drug action, and also clinical pharmacy, which you can think of as hospital practice, and pharmacy practice, which is more or less community. Now, there's you know, those disciplines are merged to some degree, but our program for more than 40 years has been delivered based on those five disciplines, and so there's really significant divides between those. They are taught as independent subjects. And so a lot of our program now is still focused on that, even though what we want to try to do is merge those disciplines into what I consider a new type of knowledge, which integrates those. You have, if you look at those five disciplines, they each have, like the faculty members in those five disciplines, have come out of specific paradigms of thought. And those paradigms, so if you look at medicinal chemistry, there's a particular paradigm that defines medicinal chemistry, and that is what knowledge we think is important, how do we teach that knowledge, the kind of theories and ideas and practices that are accepted, and just ways of thinking about the world. So, like, worldviews of a medicinal chemist. And those are, you know, it may be hard to believe this, but they're quite different than a person who is a scientist in pharmaceutics, drug delivery, or a pharmacologist. And honestly, they're this is a bit of an exaggeration, but I want to say light years different than the practitioners. Like the high-end clinical practitioners that we have here, they think that the science doesn't matter, and it doesn't impact their ability to make clinical decisions. So we have this group of faculty members here which don't think the sciences are important, and we've got this group of scientists that are adamant that all the scientific knowledge will make better clinical decisions. And you know what the clinicians will say is, I don't care how and why the drug works, I want to know if it works. And that's based on the clinical evidence. And so, like, I call these solitudes. So within the faculty here, we've got these solitudes. And the challenge that we're facing now is, how do we get those solitudes to communicate? You can get people in a room, but if you don't know what questions to ask each other, how can you communicate on an effective level? And so that's, in a nutshell, that's the real challenge that we have.
Do you think UBC pharmacy is special?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer to that is yes, of course.
We're
number one, right? I would suggest, there's 10 schools of pharmacy in Canada. There's one in each province. two in Ontario, two in Quebec, and one in Memorial in Newfoundland. And although we are all, there's national standards for our education, so we have educational outcomes and we're all accredited by the same body, we do have uniquenesses. And I have no problem with that. So Dalhousie, as an example, in Halifax, is an all problem-based learning curriculum, very, very high-end. They do a lot of critical appraisal work in there, very, very well-established. Mm-hmm. They've done a lot of work at integrating the sciences and the practice end. The French schools have their, you know, their own way of thinking about things. So it changes a little bit. From my perspective, that this school is unique. I'm not sure whether I can tell you why it's unique, but just simply because it's on the West Coast here, it's a different context. It'll have its own subtleties and characteristics. But I've worked I worked 10 years at the national level with as a governing body for academic pharmacy, and I can tell you that all the schools are filled with fabulous people, and they're really into it. They want to do very, very committed to the profession, and but there will be subtle differences between the schools.
For a second.
Okay.
So what's your favorite functional group?
Hydroxide.
Favorite molecule?
Ibuprofen.
What's your favorite drug?
Macrolide antibiotics.
True or false? Music is a drug.
Yeah. I'd say yeah. Definitely.
It can have a...
It has a physiological effect for me. If you look at the definition of a drug, it doesn't change the function, but it upregulates or downregulates some biological process. And when I hear music that I like, it makes me want to move. Right? And my partner and I love to dance, so I would say yes, it's a drug.
Is there any music you'd like to hear right now? Anything.
James Brown.
Oh dear, okay.
Yeah. Now let me think of the song.
One,
I love James
two,
Brown.
One, two, three,
Hot pants! Hey, hot pants! Hot pants! Smoking that hot pants! That's where it's at. That's where it's at. Check your mind cell phone. It looks much better time. My feet will keep going. Girl, you're blowing my mind. Thinking of losing that funky feeling, don't. Cause you got to use what you got to get just what you want. Hey, hot pants. Hot pants, smoking. Hot pants make you sure to sell. Good God, you walk like you got the only love in the world. Hey, so brother, if you're thinking of losing that feeling, then don't. Cause a woman got to use what you got to get just what you want. Hey! Pants won't make you dance, but as slick as you are, you make the pants. Hey, bro, do you like it? The girl over there with funky pants on, she can do the chicken all night long. The girl over there with the hot pants on. Bought me all night long. The girl over there with the hot pants on built the Mac test all night long. Get down. The one over there with the thin dress. I ain't got time to still dig that mess. Get down. But I like hot pants. Hey, I like hot pants.
Every Sunday at 10 p.m. to midnight. Hosted by DJ Smiley Mike and DJ Caddyshack.
Okay, let me explain that those things of relative importance, because they teach us all of this And knowing the disease states, I consider that to be physician's work. That's doctor work to me. Knowing the dosages, I consider that my number two priority, how to get this in. Cost and pharmacare coverage, I consider that lookable. I'll just check the files.
Okay, so you...
How the drugs are recommended, I consider that doctor work. And sort of arbitrary, because they change. It's just general recommendations. I don't memorize that. But how the drugs work is what we do that nobody else does. That's a 10.5.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, when I listen to you talk, you've got a framework now about how to assess those things. And I think that that's super important for students to start to develop. It's these broader frameworks which help you make decisions about what you think is important. What I would say is that... just historically, you know, medicine and pharmacy have been at each other's throats for hundreds of years.
Really?
Yeah. Big battles that go back to the Middle Ages, when the professions weren't really established yet. But they battled over the years a lot. In BC here, really, like I really like the history. I think we've lost our sense of history, and so in some ways we're all working in a vacuum. Like, why are we doing what we're doing? Well, you know, if you understand your history, let me back up. Philosophers of education would say, if you don't know your history, you don't know who you are. And I would suggest that that our students don't have a, and I don't just mean students, I mean our faculty, do not have a strong sense of our history and why we're in the position we're in right now. So why should pharmacy be struggling for its identity within the healthcare system? Which I think it's not so much now, but 5 years ago, there was talk of, why do we need pharmacists? They're overpaid technicians.
No kidding. Okay.
Right. So, in BC, the physicians were dominant for a long time. To give you a specific example, up until 1972, and the implementation of labeling legislation came through the BC legislature, pharmacists were not allowed to label drugs. We're not allowed to talk to their patients about what the drug was. No drug information was passed along to the patient.
Just dispensing.
Yeah, and if you were caught by the doctor giving the patient information about the drug, you were chastised.
Wow.
I know. I mean, when you think about that, right? And if you look at the enrollment, well, there's a very interesting document was commissioned by the BC Pharmacists Association in 1966. It was called Pharmacy Commission of British Columbia. So they did a really detailed study of the profession, all aspects of the profession in the province. And the reason was that enrollments in the program, nobody wanted to come in because basically pharmacists were merchandisers. They couldn't make, or at that time, they were having trouble making money through prescriptions. They were, and what they were having to do was subsidize the pharmacy aspect with merchandise. So the pharmacists were lighting their hair on fire because all they did was sell like rubber tomahawks and chickens and chocolate bars and, you know, stuff like that. And once the labeling legislation came in, that really released a lot of this tension. In addition to that, PharmaCare for a number of years paid for all the prescriptions for seniors. And so, like, the number of prescriptions just went through the roof, and pharmacists were making a ton of dough at that time. But now, You look at pharmacists. They're starting to pressure the doctors, because it's like you mentioned, only the pharmacists know about drugs. I said that a number of times in 220. Like, you guys are the only guys that know about drugs to the degree that you do. Nobody else can claim that, in my view. So pharmacists, you know, in terms of, you were mentioning what the physicians' sort of area is. Like, I think pharmacists are very capable of doing that as well. Like, you know, perhaps not as much, well, you don't know as much about diagnosing and things like that as doctors, for sure. But that's something you can learn. Just like doctors learn about drugs, you can learn about diagnosing. Have studied pharmacy as a profession and across the professions, and there's a number of different ways of looking at the health professions, but one individual his last name is Abbott. He published a quite a seminal book in the late 90s, but he considers the health professions as an ecosystem. And they're always jostling for position. So we have our core services, and then there's things that we try to branch out on. And as soon as we try to branch out, we're encroaching on somebody else's territory. And that's when all the red flags come up. So if you listen to the news, as soon as pharmacists are talking about prescribing. Who is the first person you see in the news? They get in front of the cameras and they say, that's not the pharmacist's job, you know. And similarly with naturopathic doctors. They don't have any training in drugs, nothing, hardly anything. And yet they were given the right to prescribe. And so that was, and then you look at pharmacy technicians. They're taking over the dispensing aspect. And if you look at that just simply on a monetary level, why would you pay somebody $50 an hour for, you know, instead of somebody, you know, getting $20 an hour to do probably as good a job, you know, and in some ways a better job because that's what they're specifically trained to do. So it's all this jostling all the time.
Okay, so it is sort of a battle.
Yeah, and I wouldn't, you know, I mean, you can think of it in different ways. Ultimately, our healthcare system needs help. Like, it's not sustainable the way it is now. And so we need innovative practices from all professions to help us deal with wait times. And, you know, that this drug morbidity and mortality issue in the healthcare system now. Like, who's going to do that? And so I think it's our responsibility as a profession to do what we can. And if that encroaches on other people's territory, well, you know what? It's going to benefit the broader population. And so one of the interesting things that I feel we've lost in the faculty, I think we're starting to gain it now, but it's our sense of social responsibility. So what are we here for? We're not here for our individual careers and our research careers and as far as I'm concerned. We are here to help the general population, and we do that through empowering our students to be the best healthcare professionals they can be.
I hope forever. Don't tell my mommy till I pull myself together. I think it's me, but I just need to see if this is real, just something that I need. Don't tell my mommy. Don't tell my mommy. Don't tell my mommy till I pull myself together.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Out for the tide that binds, because you're mine, I walk the line.
Okay, I have one more question. So I have a background in languages. So from grade one, I did French immersion. I was born in New Brunswick. It's a bilingual province.
Yeah.
And then I worked and lived in Thailand and in Japan. And in teaching English and also studying other languages, I got like a really profound respect for, you know, rhetoric, communication, and also like the value of a name. Do you see any way to get a handle on how they name drugs?
That's a very good question. And naming compounds is a say it's a very challenging aspect of getting a handle on drug structure. There's a number of different ways of naming compounds. So you have the IUPAC nomenclature, super complicated. Like in our daily conversations, are we going to use 1,1,3,8? You know, trimethyl, fluoropropyl, whatever it happens to be. No, that's not going to work in a conversation. Most of the drugs, but that is one way of naming compounds. It's very systematic, and it allows you to build a drug from a name. I don't find that helpful at all. The other way that drugs are named is what's called by their trivial name. And this is like things like ibuprofen, naproxen, acetaminophen, ASA. Those are what are referred to as the trivial names. And honestly, like we said in 220, each drug has a story. Each one of those names has come about through the drug development process, through the people that identified the drug. Perhaps it's related to the original medicinal plant that it came from. Is very complex, and I couldn't agree with you more about that. You look at the NSAIDs; they're characterized by certain functional groups. But if you go into the kinase inhibitors, they only have they have, and you'll learn this in third year in 430 and 435. 435, I think, primarily. David Gerson talks about this, but the kinase enzymes are involved in phosphorylation, so the substrate is ATP. And there's only two functional groups that actually bind specifically to the, they call it the hinge region of the enzyme.
Uh-huh.
So it slides right into the pocket and binds by those, and they're hydrogen bonds or something like that, some kind of intermolecular forces. Everything else, those drugs, if you look at a series of kinase inhibitors, their structures are all over the place. You could make sense of that. And what they've done there is they've mapped the binding site. They see the hydrophobic pockets. And what they do is they have this one part of the drug which does the binding, and then they modify the drug. Have you done some structure activity?
I actually took a Grierson elective this
semester. Oh, you did? Okay. So you probably are familiar with this then. But they would modify the drug structure so that those pieces of the drug go into the hydrophobic pockets, and that they have their hydrogen bonding, their van der Waals interactions, and that changes the potency. So it's very difficult to, like, the naming of these things is brutal. So there are ways. I haven't actually sat down and figured out a system I think would be very valuable to students. So the kinase inhibitors are generally, they end with the NIB, nib. Uh-huh. So erlotinib,
gefitinib. Okay.
There are all kinds of them. Like, there's probably 20 or 30 now.
That's at least helpful then.
Yeah. And then you have the MABs. And those are usually biologics. So they're either antibodies or I can't remember now. The cillins, right? The penicillins, and so you've got the lactam antibiotics, cephalosporins, the fluoroquinolones, right? So there's ways of making sense of that, but I'll tell you, Adam, that is a real, that's one of the things I've got on my list of things to do for students, so that they can look at the top 400 drugs, look at the name, and get some sense of what's important about that drug. And, you know, so that the NIB piece, if you can identify a NIB as a kinase inhibitor, then you know what the pharmacophore is. That is the piece of the drug that does most of the binding in there. And to make those broader connections, I think, would be super helpful in terms of helping students understand names. Because, you know, you go into your pharmacology, you tell me if this is your experience.
Okay. But
this is my experience, is that the drugs that you learn by name primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you do with that? Except memorize, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that developing expert knowledge in pharmacy does not require memorization, because it does. But helping students build these broader frameworks so you don't have to memorize anything, because you'll never memorize it all, right?
No, not mistakes.
If you're like me, like, I hate memorizing. You know, it's just brutal. So the naming issue... huge. It's huge everywhere.
CIBC is proud to be a host venue of the Special Olympics Canada 2014 Summer Games this July 8th through the 12th. The Games will see 1,300 athletes from all across Canada and over 4,000 volunteers, spectators, coaches, and guests on our Vancouver campus over the week. All events are free to attend. Learn more at ubc.ca/Vancouver2014.
All right, I'm not sure if you were with us from the beginning, but we started out with some Propagandy, some Rec Center, and then some White Horse. After that, we heard Good for Grapes. Their song was Little Carmichael. Then we heard Hot Pants by James Brown. Special request. Then we heard Data Romance, their song Cargo. Then Mother by Said the Whale, Vancouver band. And the last band we heard was Blue and White Van, a song called Liberty. So that's it for this week, radio fans. I want to say a special thank you to Dr. Simon Albin for speaking with me. Next week we have a special celebrity guest interview coming up, so be sure to tune in. Now we're going to leave you with one more song. This is another Vancouver band. They are called Ivory Hours. And the song is Climbing Bittersweet.
Benevolent, but so unkind. listening to Tim.
Sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, and sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, and sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, sausage, pork, beef, cheese,
press 1 if you are tripping balls. Press 2 if you are planning to trip balls. Press 3 if all the balls have been tripped, yet you find yourself adrift amongst the tubes of the ether, dreaming of tubes amongst spheres that have not yet been you. Pressed 1, you are tripping balls.
Relax. You're not tripping balls. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Sample the various flavors of Italian music from north to south, traditional to modern, on this bilingual show. Folk, singer-songwriter, jazz, and much more. Give them the boot, Tuesday, 2 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
Why did you eat the whole thing?
Because
you snuck in my room and got them and shut the door. Because I told you not to eat anymore. Why'd you eat so many?
Because I love M&M's.
I know you love M&M's, but now you're going to have a tummy ache.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
When I have a rumbly in my tummy, the only thing that makes me feel better is listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Listening to CITR 101.9, the best community radio on the West Coast.